On this bonus episode of American Sidecar, we're going to dig into the profession of attorneys. And we'll be talking about the job outlook, what's good, what's bad, and whether going to law school is the right option for you. So let's talk about law school, being a lawyer, and the ins and outs of the profession. First of all, full disclosure, if you didn't know, I am a licensed attorney. I've gone to law school and paid my dues, passed the bar exam, and am currently a practicing attorney in the state of Tennessee. So, with that said, I do have some perspective in the legal profession. I'm also a professor, and I teach the Intro to Law and Legal System, and have been doing that since 2015. And so I'm always trying to educate my students as they determine what they would like to do with their life. But there's a lot of misconceptions about law school and the legal profession in general. Many people think that it's a get-rich-quick scheme. Other people think that once you're an attorney, money starts rolling in, or there's always a job for you. And all kinds of things that are myths about the law, the legal profession, being an attorney, and going to law school. So in this brief segment of American Sidecar, I wanted to take a moment to give you a fresh point of view and a first-person point of view of the legal profession and where the education system is with that, and what is the outlook look like moving forward. So for those of you that don't know a lot about law school or the process for getting accepted into law school, let's go back just a little bit. So when you're finishing up your undergrad degree, you're probably trying to decide if you want to go out into the workforce or you're ready to go on to a graduate program or maybe a doctoral program. So you really want to start thinking about law school, hopefully in your sophomore to junior year, so you can prepare yourself for what's to come. But, you know, you can even make the decision as late into your senior year or even after you graduate, but it's going to take you longer. So the first thing you want to do is you want to take the LSAT. That is the Law School Admission Test, which is given multiple times throughout every year. And it's structured with reading, analysis and comprehension, as well as logical analysis, and some writing to determine where you are on the spectrum and whether law school would be a good fit for you. Most law schools are going to be looking for an average score of a 153 or higher, all the way up to a 180 as far as getting accepted into a good law school. They're going to take your LSAT grade, add it to your GPA, and the higher your LSAT grade, usually the lower your GPA can be within reason, but obviously you want to have as high of a GPA and as high of an LSAT score as possible. If those things don't get you in by themselves, and you're in the maybe spot, they're going to look to extracurriculars, letters of recommendation, and what you would bring to that class that might set you apart from the other members. Once all that's been done, you will get an acceptance letter from different law schools, and you choose which one you want to go to. Now, the advice I'll give you for picking a law school to go to is that you want to go somewhere where you're going to be comfortable to live for the next 3 years. It's a three-year program, and you want to be comfortable wherever you are because that will be your home for 3 years, maybe more. So you want to be happy where you're going to be because your life for the next 3 years is going to be engulfed by law school. That's the first piece. That's the getting to law school. Next, we'll talk about, well, what does law school look like? So obviously, after you've been accepted and you choose the school of your choice, you're going to start usually in the fall and get into your 1L year. Now, your 1L year is going to be probably the most traumatic and most difficult year of law school. There's a lot of misconceptions about law school. A lot of people think that after the first year, it's a piece of cake and you're good to go, or, it's not as bad as people say it is. But let me tell you, if you do law school right, your first year, especially your first semester, will be a living nightmare. You will lack sleep. You will lack time with friends, time with family. It is a crazy and insane experience, and a lot of people aren't prepared. Another misconception is that you can have a major that gives you a leg up in law school. Now, that's been told by many, many people over the years that you need a pre-law degree to go to med school. You need a pre-law degree to go to law school, or you need a political science degree to go to law school. I'm here to tell you that none of those things are going to help you in any way. Everyone that enters law school is usually on the exact same playing field. You are all reset to zero. Now, with that in mind, there are a couple of majors that may give you just a little bit of help, and that's English majors and philosophy majors, maybe some history majors. Why? Well, history and English majors obviously are going to do a lot of reading and a lot of writing. You will be doing a lot of reading and a lot of writing in law school. And philosophy majors, because you tend to learn to think a little more analytically or outside of the box. And in law school, you're going to be retrained on how to think and assess and analyze situations and sets of facts given the appropriate information that you have. But other than that, no one really has a leg up. You're all on the same playing field. You're all starting from scratch, because you basically know nothing when you enter law school. Now, you may have taken some law classes and you may understand how to read a few cases. That's definitely helpful, but no one really has a huge advantage in law school. So, your first year, you're going to do basic courses, basic bar prep, and it is brutal. The classes are brutal, and here's why. They are structured in such a way as to weed out, honestly, the weaklings, the ones who just do not have what it takes to get through the next 2 years. You will drop people in your first semester, your first year. People disappear. We had, in my class, one or two people that left after the first couple of days. They determined it wasn't for them, which was great because they got their refund. But once you've made it through that first year, you really don't want to turn around and go back. You've put too much blood, sweat, and tears into this program to suddenly turn around and say, oh, wait a minute, it's not for me. But you have to bust your butt that first semester especially. And here's why. The reason you want to keep your nose to the grindstone and do the absolute best that you possibly can in your first semester of law school is because there is a bell curve. And it's different from your normal grading in an undergraduate setting, because only a percentage of students will get an A. And then a larger percentage will get a B, and then you have another percentage that get a C. And why is that different? Well, it's different because, say, every single person in a class of 100 received numerically a grade that equaled to a B. So let's say an 80 to a 100. Now, in an undergraduate class, everybody would receive A's and B's. In law school, that's not how it works. So you're put on this spectrum, and they're going to equalize it out to where the percentage of students with the highest grade are going to get A's. The middle group will get their B's. And then the bottom percentage are going to get C's, even though you did B work. Now, that's frustrating, and it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially if you're not aware of that going in. And most law schools tell you about the curve, but it doesn't really make sense until you get those first grades back your first semester of law school, and you realize you've been an A student your entire college career, and you're just now sitting in the B section. Now, don't be disheartened. There's nothing wrong with B's and even C's in law school. It's just, it's a wake-up call. Because most people that go to law school, they've always done well in school, and they've probably always been closer to the top of their class, at least a good few of them. And it's a huge wake-up call when you get that first list of grades back. And you're looking for all A's, and you're sitting there, you've got maybe one A, three or four B's, and maybe a C. The margins are usually so tight between students that there's always a fight for those top scores. But the reason it's important is if you're in the very, very bottom that first semester, because of that curve, chances are it's going to be even more difficult for you to crawl out of that bottom after your first year. You can. It's absolutely possible because there is some shifting after the first semester. Some people get in there and they get a good grade that first semester. They feel like they can ease back a little bit. And as soon as they ease back, someone else bumps them off and knocks them off that A list. So it is possible, but you want to dig in as far as you can that first semester so you're at least in the middle of the pack so you don't have to fight so hard to get out of that bottom area. When we come back, we'll talk about bar exams and job outlook for attorneys. So by this point, you made it through your 1L year, and you realize that by your 2L year and your 3L year, your final year of law school, you've learned how to cope and deal with the stress and the amount of work. It's not that it got easier. You just understand how to attack it and compensate and cope. And that's the key to surviving law school, is understanding those coping mechanisms and understanding how you study, how you learn, and how to appropriately time manage and deal with your workload. So finally, after you graduate law school, unfortunately, we decide that you need to also take something called the bar exam. Now, depending on what state you're in, it's going to look like a 2 or 3 day exam with multiple choice questions and written questions. And it is brutal. It's about 6 hours each day, depending on the jurisdiction that you're in, and you're going to study your butt off for an entire summer just to learn all the information that you need to regurgitate onto this piece of paper to become an attorney. Now, you have to put in the work and the effort that summer before you take the bar. It is crucial. You cannot mess around. You have to pay attention. You have to study. You have to outline. You have to shut everything else out of your life, be it stress, be it family, be it friends, when you're studying. Now, with that being said, you need to take a few hours of your week, every week, for yourself, to get away from the mundane, humdrum hours and hours and hours of studying, to recharge your mind, body, and spirit so that you can go into that next week and study harder and harder and process that information to put it on the bar exam. You go in, you take your bar exam, you get this wonderful release after it's over. You just feel like this weight has just lifted, and now it's time to start looking for employment. And you don't even know if you've passed yet. Well, a lot of people have a feeling when they're done with exams like that, but you never really know. You just do not know how the points are going to be graded, how subjective the essays are going to be. And so you just never know what the actual outcome will be. So now, after all that's said and done, and you're looking for jobs, if you don't already have one lined up, you may start to ask yourself, well, what happened? Where are all these jobs that I was told would be there? Well, this is why I wanted to do this podcast, because I wanted to give you some information that apparently a lot of people aren't aware of when they're trying to determine what type of career they want to do. So there's something called the Occupational Outlook Handbook. And what the Occupational Outlook Handbook does is it's put out by the United States Department of Labor. And what it does is it gives you a breakdown of statistics, activity, working conditions, price changes in the economy about various professions and jobs. The Occupational Outlook Handbook and the Bureau of Labor Statistics have a mission to collect, analyze, and disseminate essential economic information to support public and private decision-making. And as an independent statistical agency, the BLS serves its diverse user communities by providing products and services that are accurate, objective, relevant, timely, and accessible. So they give you just the facts, complete transparency, confidentiality, gold standard data, customer input, customer service, and innovation. And they're there for the consumers, job seekers, policymakers, etc. And so they publish this Occupational Outlook Handbook, and it will give you a forward-looking picture of 10 years for what that occupation is going to look like for the work environment, how to become one, what the expected pay scale is going to be, where are these jobs located, what are similar occupations, and what is the overall outlook. So I want to give you an idea of what the job outlook is, and I'm getting this from the Occupational Outlook Handbook for lawyers. So when you use the Occupational Outlook Handbook, it used to be a printed book. They may still print it, but now you can just type in Occupational Outlook Handbook online, go in there, and start searching for the occupation that you're looking for. So obviously I looked for lawyers. And this is what the OOH has to say for lawyers from 2016 to 2026. The employment of lawyers is projected to grow at about 8%, about as fast as the average for all occupations. Demand for legal work is expected to continue as individuals, businesses, and all levels of government require legal services in many areas. However, despite this need for legal services, more price competition over the next decade may lead law firms to rethink their project staffing in order to reduce costs to clients. Clients are expected to cut back on legal expenses by demanding less expensive rates and scrutinizing invoices. Work that was previously assigned to lawyers, such as document review, may now be given to paralegals and legal assistants. Also, some routine legal work may be outsourced to other lower-cost legal providers located overseas. Although law firms will continue to be among the largest employers of lawyers, many large corporations are increasing their in-house legal departments in order to cut costs. For many companies, the high cost of hiring outside counsel lawyers and their support staff makes it more economical to shift work to their in-house legal department. This shift will lead to an increase in demand for lawyers in a variety of settings, such as financial and insurance firms, consulting firms, and healthcare providers. The federal government is likely to continue to need lawyers to prosecute or defend civil cases on behalf of the United States, prosecute criminal cases brought by the federal government, and collect money owed to the federal government. However, budgetary constraints at all levels of government, especially the federal level, will likely moderate employee growth. Now, that's just the overall outlook. But let's talk about the job prospects, because this is what's most important. Because when you're trying to determine a profession or a career, you want to see what the outlook is for at least the next 10 years of your life so you can determine if that's a viable solution or a viable choice that's going to put you in a good place and do that cost-benefit analysis. We all know that law school is very expensive, so you want to see what the cost-benefit analysis is. Well, the job prospects for the next 10 years from 2016 to 2026 are as follows. Despite the projected growth in new jobs for lawyers, competition for jobs should continue to be strong, because more students are graduating from law school each year than there are jobs available. According to the American Bar Association and the National Lawyer Population Survey, a compilation of data collected by the state bar associations or licensing agencies, there were over 1.3 million resident and active attorneys as of December 2016. Some law school graduates who have been unable to find permanent positions turn to temporary staffing firms that place attorneys in short-term jobs. These firms allow companies to hire lawyers as needed and permit beginning lawyers to develop practical experience. Many other law school graduates and licensed lawyers end up finding work in other occupations or industries due to the difficulty in finding jobs with traditional legal employers. Because of the strong competition, a law school graduate's willingness to relocate and his or her practical experiences are becoming more important. However, to be licensed in another state, a lawyer may have to take an additional state bar exam. While many New York lawyers are hired each year by law firms, this does not guarantee stable employment in the profession. Newly hired lawyers, known as associates, must either advance within their firm or may be forced to leave, a practice commonly known as up or out. Those who leave firms may find work as in-house counsel with companies, with government agencies, or as self-employed lawyers. So, employment in 2016, there were 792,500 attorneys. The projected employment for 2026 is 857,500 attorneys, for a difference of about 65,000 attorneys. But we're over 1.3 million attorneys as of 2016. So that gives you an idea of where the job outlook is for the legal profession, and whether it's a good solution or a good career choice for you. But let's dig in a little bit more. So the pay scale as of May 2017 states that annual wage for lawyers was around $119,250. The median wage is the wage at which half the workers in an occupation earned more than that amount and half earned less. And the lowest 10% earned less than $57,430, and the highest 10% earned more than $208,000. So for legal services, there's an average of $120,000 a year, federal government $141,000 a year, local government and state governments are between $85,000 and $93,000 a year. So, when you realize that your law school degree is probably going to cost you in the range of $100,000 to $200,000, you realize that this massive amount of debt that you're taking on to get this degree may not translate into the payoff that you thought it would, because you have to think, if there are hundreds of thousands of attorneys that are looking for jobs that aren't there, then that higher degree of salary at about $120,000 a year may not be there because it's so competitive. There's going to be people that are willing to work for less just to find that employment. And understand that half of the attorney population makes under $119,000 a year. And yet they've spent at least that or more on their education. The lowest 10% are making below 57. People, those of you that are considering going to law school, I want you to think really hard and dig into the numbers, understand what being an attorney looks like, because this is only a portion of it. Once you are licensed, once you have passed the bar exam and you are a practicing attorney, you have bar fees that are due every year, which can be a couple hundred bucks or more. You also have continuing legal education fees every year, which are required by your state bar association. And in some states, like the state of Tennessee, you have a professional tax that you pay every year, which comes to the sum of $400 more every year that you are licensed as an attorney. So it becomes also an expensive profession. Malpractice insurance is not cheap, which you need to carry because you don't want people suing you for malpractice. So understand that becoming an attorney sounds great. It sounds wonderful. It's very prestigious. And when you say you're an attorney, the first thing a person sees in their eyes is dollar signs. Oh, well, this person has tons of money. They're very well off. Well, those attorneys who have been practicing for years, I'm sure they are doing well. But understand that if you're looking into becoming an attorney, the job outlook and the work environment for you is going to be a lot different from the attorneys who have been practicing 20 plus years. The legal world is different, changing. There's areas of the law that used to be cash cows that aren't anymore. And as mentioned in the job outlook, companies are looking to reduce legal fees, not increase them. So it's going to become harder and harder to meet that threshold for income that we usually would associate with attorneys in this country. So while it's still prestigious, it's still wonderful work helping people through their legal troubles, understand that this is not the fairy tale that television shows and other people make it out to be. The people who have been practicing for 20, 30 years, sure, they're most likely doing well off. They worked hard for it, but it was also an easier environment at the time. Now, with so many attorneys looking for work, it becomes harder and harder to find that big payoff that will set you up moving forward to have a lucrative career in the law. So I wanted you to be informed and understand that this Occupational Outlook Handbook is a wonderful resource when choosing what you want to do with your life. And understand that if you want to go to law school, that's great. If that's your passion, go, do it. But just know the facts instead of what these schools will lead you to believe just so they can get you in and get their money. So I hope this is helpful. And this is a little different from our normal podcast, but so many politicians end up going to law school. Maybe that's their problem, but I wanted to bring this to your attention, especially for anyone out there who's a student trying to decide what they want to do with their life and their career.